Do you have a like an emergency backup topic in case we run out of inspiration?
Well, we'll just keep asking you more and more questions about the collaboration until we run out of time.
Yeah, it'll get really like aggressive and personal as well. So I'm prepared for that.
Okay. I must admit, I think this is the first time I've ever talked to you guys, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, that's probably a good...
She's never introduced me, so I have been wondering what goes on in this darkened little room every Sunday. When she says, don't come in for an hour, I'm recording something.
We come in here and we talk about you.
It's true, that's the function of this podcast, so just be prepared for that.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've been introduced to each other's cats more than each other's partners on this thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah, she does have a habit. She'll jump up on the desk and sniff the microphone. So if there's a funny sniffing noise, it's not me.
And sometimes the cat does it as well.
Jokes.
Oh, come on. It was Simon Forster.
Yes.
Why do I feel as if there's an intro joke just waiting to happen?
Webcomics Company Podcast. Visit www.webcomics.co.
Welcome to the Webcomics Company Podcast, a fortnightly podcast of fantastic people who do webcomics. Let's introduce ourselves.
Hello, I'm James Spence. I do a comic called Girls in Space at girlsinspace.co.uk.
Hi, I'm Luke Healy, and sorry for laughing during James's intro. You can find my comic at swanynook.com.
I'm Zoe Kirk Robinson, one half of All Over the House at alloverthehouse.net, one half of The Life of Knob T. Mouse at knobmouse.net, and the main writer and artist for Inkproof Canon at inkproofcanon.com.
And I'm Jennifer Kirk Robinson, and I'm the other half of all of those, and I also have a real job as well somewhere, writing books.
And you can be found at jennifer-kirk.com, isn't it?
Yes, either that or in my bedroom.
Way to lower the tone, babe.
Well, it's also my office.
Ah, right, excellent.
Which makes it sound so much better.
I have that too, which basically means it's that much easier to work through the middle of the night and then just like roll into bed. I think it encourages terrible sleeping habits to combine the two.
Oh, I can sympathise.
I should say as well, we've got apologies from Luke Searle this week, and you can find his work at lukesearle.com.
That's true, he's not here.
What a tremendous comic. Everybody should probably read it.
I think everyone already does. He gets more reviews than I do.
Oh, that's true. Curse him and his accessible popularity.
Oh dear.
Well, but hold on, be careful what you say, because he will listen back to this, won't he? Won't he?
That's probable.
What we'll do is any sort of gaps that we leave in the conversation, we'll just ask Luke to come in and fill them in for us, sort of post-production. Okay. So we'll sort of ask questions, then leave a big gap, and then when he comes in, he can sort of add basically all the quality and comedy into it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that sounds great. Less work for us.
So, yes, this week, what are we talking about, guys? That's my subtle, not even subtle, it was just a terrible, terrible way to introduce the topic that I didn't even do. So now I pointed it out and it's become more awkward and awful, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse, so somebody please cut me off. Oh god.
I'm curious to see where it goes if you just keep talking.
This is completely unrelated, as are most of my anecdotes, but in secondary school, I was part of, like, a drama. We did drama after school, And we went and we had to play this game where you had to talk for as long as possible without stopping. And I was the champion, so don't challenge me. It could ruin the entire podcast.
I have created a fantastic new section. And this week, Luke is talking.
I think we should avoid that section for fear of absolutely destroying people's joy.
So shall we start and talk first about how we got on with Facebook?
Yeah,
okay. Why don't you guys go first?
Is this like your homework? You set yourself homework at the end of the last episode or something?
Jenny, yeah. Why can you not listen to our podcast?
Oh, yes, but I must have blinked and missed that bit.
The challenge was to set ourselves up a Facebook page and just basically see if it brought us in any traffic and basically see how easy it was to set up and all that kind of malarkey. So did you guys set one up?
Yeah, I certainly did. And you know how much traffic it's got me?
I suspect it might be the same as what mine brought me.
Which is, according to my Facebook, Daily Insights, daily post feedback is 1 point. I have no idea what that means.
Do you think it's like out of 10 or...?
Oh, that's even worse than I thought.
Maybe it's a percentage point or something.
That would be pretty terrible.
She's got 15 friends, but I'm looking down the list and thinking, hold on, you're related to all of those.
Well, yeah, 15 of your friends like this page, but we've got 30 people in total on it.
You went to university with those.
Hey, they count, okay?
Yeah, they're not my mum, therefore they're all right.
Okay.
The people who joined my page, I mean no offence to you, James, I don't think it counts, because James was the only person who liked the page.
Oh.
So, very successful for me, Facebook campaign in raising awareness of my comic to one person who already reads it.
You know, you'd have had two people if I'd thought, I should go around and friend these.
I know, she's got James Spence friended her, but she didn't friend him back.
I did.
I'm very James. Grateful.
Yeah, I found James, but I didn't find anyone else.
I don't have much more to say about the Facebook thing. I probably didn't do enough to promote it.
Well, I suppose the thing I've been wondering about is what's it supposed to do? Like, I mean, we've set up these pages, but you know, if I promote the Facebook page on my comic, then it's only going to get people who already read the comic, so I don't know how it's supposed to bring me in new people, apart from people who are already friends with me who probably either read it or know enough about me that they don't want to read it.
That's a good point. I think the way it's supposed to work is through viral marketing almost. So you have friends who already like the comic, who like it. Some of their friends will see that come up on their Facebook timeline thing.
Right.
And then we'll go, what's that? And they'll click on it, and then they might like it too. I think that's how it works.
I must admit that I've got a Facebook page about me for my writing stuff, and that has happened to me. I think you have to reach a certain number of people, and then it kind of feeds itself. And I've got complete strangers on there who I think, who are you? Why do you like my stuff? You know, once you get over a certain number, they seem to bring their friends with them, and they just all come along and sit there and never say anything.
So how many do you think you need to get before it starts to kind of work into this sort of loop?
I'm about 98 at the moment, and it seems to be working. It's not a huge number; it's one or two every couple of weeks. But it's at that point where it's just starting to pick up and increase.
Right. So with your page then, do you actually sort of put content onto it then regularly, or does it is it more like, what's the philosophy of that? Is it to get people to kind of discuss your work?
I'm not really sure. It's all it does is it takes an RSS feed of my blog, which is on Blogger, and right. so they come up usually a couple of days out of date. And I think a lot of people on Facebook, they're a bit lazy. They want to read it there and then. They don't want to go to another website. So yeah. I'm finding that people are subscribing to that and reading my blog posts 3 days late because they can't be bothered going to my actual blog.
Ah, yeah.
And do you think that people are maybe finding the page through having read your books and then coming to it?
Yeah, I've had a few comments. In fact, Zoe's got it up on the screen now. There's a comment from a blog post two posts ago of somebody who came to a book signing and somebody hoovering.
Yes, it's my wife's hoovering in the background. Sorry about that. I closed the door, but...
sorry, it's just, it's really weird. It's like I'm having my ears hoovered.
This week, James is recording from his hovercraft.
It's full of eels. where were we? Yeah, I had somebody who's just randomly out of the blue posted, who was at a book signing a week ago. He said, oh, I bought your new book and I'm really enjoying it. So I don't know whether he's after something.
No, he's probably saying that actually he liked it.
Yeah, but I mean, word of mouth advertising like that is worth an awful lot because you can throw money at adverts and they'll only influence people so much. But if somebody who they trust says, I like this, they're more likely to try it themselves. So I'm quite pleased that I've got a real person who I don't know who's saying it's really good.
Excellent.
That is the goal.
So what's the name of your book then?
The current one that I'm doing a lot of promotion on is called Bringing Home the Stars. It's a sci-fi horror book.
All right, cool, excellent.
It's good fun. Don't ask me too many questions about it. I'm sick of trying to describe it to people in a way that doesn't blow the plot.
Ah, right.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a big problem. People say, so tell me what the book's about. And I'm thinking, well, what can I say? And what if I say it, they go, I don't need to read it now. You've already told me, all the plot twists.
I can summarise it if you want.
If you want to.
It's a story about a guy who is accused of murder and has the chance to redeem himself and clear his name by going back to the ship that he found where his crewmates died.
Oh, I don't need to read it now, so...
Yeah, yeah. It's a sort of a retelling of the Mary Celeste story, but I've shoved it out into deep space to give it that kind of creepy sci-fi feel to it, where you can't call for help, because if you do, it'll take them 3 months to get to you.
Right. Excellent. That's quite a cool concept. That sounds good, actually.
Oh, thank you.
So there you go.
I'm mindful that this is your podcast about comics. I don't want to say too much about my real job.
Well, if we were to move back to the Facebook side of it then, do you guys think that you're going to carry on with your Facebook page, or are you wanting to sort of... use it further for... I mean, for example, I know that there's other things that it looks like you can do on there, such as putting up, a discussions area, which, apart from comments, unless you have a forum in your site, there isn't really a space for just having, discussions and things. Do you think you would keep using it for that sort of thing, or has this experiment failed?
What? Oh dear, okay.
You go ahead, Luke, sorry.
Thanks, thank you. For me, I wasn't really expecting that many people to join. I actually, there's a problem, this is going to sound stupid, there's a problem with putting links on my website at the moment in the, my little blog section underneath the comic, so right. That's kind of an issue, so I couldn't link from the actual website. So, just putting the link up on Twitter or whatever, it seems a little pointless maybe, because I have such a small readership that if they wanted to, interact with me, I'm there on Twitter and, I'll respond.
Right.
So, unless I was unless people were finding it through some other avenue, it seems maybe a little bit pointless from my perspective.
Fair enough.
Yeah. How about you, Zoe?
From my point of view, I'm definitely sticking with it. I've seen just how good Facebook can be for getting people to read a comic. For I told you last time we were on with that Cthulhu comic that I did on All Over the House.
It got linked
to from the Facebook page, the Facebook fan page of a podcast, and I got 300 to 400 people to stand up just to have a look at that comic.
Oh, brilliant.
So I've seen what Facebook can do if you get the people on it motivated to actually see your page. So
right.
I'm really interested in bumping that one up.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose, like you say, it's kind of an extra potential route that someone could find your site from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, I must admit, All Over the House does get, when you bring up the Project Wonderful adverts a thing that tells you, you know, who's clicking on what and from where.
Yeah.
The All Over the House does have a fairly healthy throughput from Facebook, but that seems to be more from people sharing strips on Facebook than the actual Facebook page.
Right.
Just that, but every comic that All Over the House does is linked to Facebook via the All Over the House RSS feed. I managed to import the RSS feed, so it gets the blog and it gets the comics.
But
you have to actually click on the comics on Facebook to go to the site to see them properly, because they're all very small.
I've done exactly the same with mine. So I mean, I'm like you, I'm going to keep it going, but I suspect I might, at least at first, just kind of keep it going in the background, because it's, you know, it's just going to keep ticking away. In my discussions area, I did set up like a discussion for each of the four stories that I've got going, and just in case, you know, it does take off. But I think it's kind of, you know, unless I sort of actively start to promote it, then it might just end up sitting, you know, kind of gathering dust to a certain extent. I don't know I don't really know what I went into this hoping to achieve out of it, other than that maybe it would have sort of brought in some new people. But
I think it will once it gets going. There's another thing. Have you seen the Star Trek fan page on Facebook?
No, I've not.
I think it's a guy. It's someone at Paramount Studios who runs this Facebook fan page for Star Trek, and it seems to be their job, or at least part of their job, is to every day put up a question or a statement and then see what the comments bring. And every day you'll get 400 or 500 people having a chat in the comments section of this one post to Facebook. So every time I go onto my Facebook timeline, there's a message from Star Trek near the top of it.
Oh, right, that's quite cool.
Yeah.
I see it there, yeah.
So that seems quite good, because not only does Facebook then get you people seeing it, but because of the way that Facebook brings up the news, if people have been commenting on anything that's been posted, it comes to the top of the news. So it's always that. Which I think is quite nice.
Yeah,
that's true. A lot of websites have done it well. I think the key to that is, you know, you need a semi large / active fan base. I know that the comic Happle Tea, I don't know if you've ever read it, it's kind of a 3-panel gag comic about philosophy, it's quite good. He has a Facebook profile that announces every time a new strip is updated, and he always gets a few comments on it. And his website always has tons and tons of comments under the comic as well. So I think it's, you know, if you're not getting comments on your website, I'm not sure how much of a difference Facebook is going to make, if you know what I mean. It's slightly more accessible, but for a lot of comment systems, you don't need to have login or anything anymore. You just type in a username.
Yeah.
I'm very much of the opinion that making it easier for people to comment is going to get you more comments, so I do know what you mean there. But also, oddly enough, I find that out of the two, All of the House is more likely to get a comment on the Facebook fan page on the comic strip, rather than the actual website.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's a certain type of person who will comment on Facebook rather than anywhere else because they're used to talking to people on Facebook.
Right. So it's
as if they don't realise they can comment on the comic.
With mine, I certainly get comments. Usually on the actual website, I get like 10 to 20 comments per page. But I'm so
jealous about that.
But so far on the Facebook page, other than one by Zoe herself, I've not had really any comments on my Facebook page. So I guess if someone's read the comic on the site, they wouldn't think to go elsewhere to leave a comment on it. They could just hit the button under the strip, I guess.
I suppose so, yeah.
Do you have a question for the team? If so, pose it at www.webcomics.co.
Webcomics Company Podcast.
Yeah, also, I think that, you know, James and I maybe are making quite different comics to yours.
Because
yours more gag style. Yeah. So, I don't know if that would make a difference. I think maybe in my mind it would, in terms of commenting.
It'd be interesting. I wonder how Luke Searle gets on with his as well, because his is very much a sort of, individual sort of panel. So
he gets a huge amount of comics. Not comics, he gets a huge amount of comments. Every time I look at his site, he's got comments about the comics.
Ah, yeah.
He's got a very interacting audience.
Yeah, that's true. He does, yeah. And it looks like he's got over 300 friends on his Facebook page as well. So he's definitely won the hat.
He does have a much larger audience than us as well. So
which again comes to the snowball effect. Once you've got a certain amount of people that are involved, everything rolls on from there.
Yeah, I think it's a bit like what I was saying earlier on, is that people start to bring other people with them, and the more people you've got, the more likely they are to bring lots more people with them.
That's true. You know, you got to get over the hump of your first small group of readers, and then it just kind of goes on from there. I agree with that totally.
And I think with the internet as well, you get some people who are like the cool kids, and everybody wants to go and hang where they're hanging. So you get a few of the cool kids to come along, and they bring loads of people with them.
That's true.
Unfortunately, I'm not one of the cool kids.
Why aren't you? Go make yourself cool and come back, and then we can test that.
Okay, I'll go and sit in the freezer for a bit.
So shall we wind up this and perhaps talk about what our next little project will be?
Excellent. Feel free to go ahead. Okay. I just started speaking and realised I didn't know what I was going to say.
That's fine. So, Facebook groups, thumbs up or thumbs down?
I get it, because the Facebook thumbs up. I'm so sorry. I have my hand sideways for now.
I think I'm also going to keep my hand sideways for now, just until I kind of see how it sort of runs its course. I think what I'd like to do is maybe try and post a few things specific to Facebook that I've not put on the site, and then maybe kind of say to my readers, you know, go and have a look at the Facebook page for some extra content or something, and that'll maybe kick it off a wee bit more. So I'll hold fire for now, but I will I'll let you know in couple of weeks time how it's going.
I like that idea of extra content. I'm going to try that myself, but
excellent.
I'm going to definitely give a thumbs up to Facebook.
I must admit I'd give it a thumbs up as well, if only because I've met people at signings who've paid money to buy one of my books based on the fact that they've seen information on, amongst other things, the Facebook page.
Right.
So
cool. Oh, well, that's good then. So a definite thumbs up from you guys, and maybes from me and Luke's.
So not bad for our first one then.
Yeah.
That's true. Facebook overall gets a net thumbs up, I suppose.
So, as our next homework, do either of you have any ideas? Because I have a kind of idea.
All right, well, let's hear the kind of idea then.
I'm thinking about guest art. After the webcomic Secret Santa, that went up in December, I'm thinking guest art may be a way to both boost our potential readership. So I was thinking of trying some of that with some key people that perhaps might need some guest art.
Excellent.
Yeah, that sounds a good idea.
Sounds brilliant. Yeah, in fact, it couldn't come at a better time. I've just finished one story and I'm just a way to start the next one. So it might be nice to have a wee break in between to do some different things. So yeah, excellent. That would be great.
Sounds good then. Luke?
I'd definitely be happy to do guest art. I suppose I'll start with you guys, to do that. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, in that case, it to be reciprocated.
Double thumbs up there.
Oh, man. Getting guest art, is always so cool.
Can I just say, if I bring a note from my mum, can I get out of the guest art thing? Because I can't do it.
Oh. You did a guest art for Knob Mouse.
Have you seen it?
Yes.
I can just about draw stick people and things that are just like footballs with eyes. But
I thought Knob Mouse was great.
Cool. We'll accept the note from your mum. That'll work.
You have to send as guest art a note from your mum.
I suppose I can do that. She's got very. She word processes everything. It makes things so much easier.
One of them. No way to prove it, eh?
Exactly.
Excellent. So that's great. So that's the next assignment. Cool. So,
good job, team.
Yeah.
You are listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. Stay tuned for more banter.
Well, so shall we move on to the next topic then, which as we've got Jennifer and Zoe both here, we were going to talk about collaborations. How do you guys find working as a team?
I found it actually pretty good. I've done collaborations in the past working on scripts, and I think as long as you find the right person, it does work very well. But by the same token, I've tried collaborations before where you think you're going to get on with the person, you think that you're on the same wavelength, and it's just turned into this torturous, horrible ordeal that both sides have mutually parted company and thought, that was a bit of a bad couple of weeks.
Right.
So, as long as you've got that right person, it is very good. And with Zoe, we just kind of think alike. We've got the same sense of humour, and it has worked out really well.
Oh, brilliant. Is this where Zoe chips in and says, no, it doesn't work at all?
Actually, guys, it's hell. She has a flat in a basement drawing comics and then she whips me whenever she doesn't like them. It's horrible. Please help.
Oh, dear.
Not really. It's actually very good. I like to be able to produce work that makes at least one other person laugh.
Right.
So, yeah, the chance to fire off some ideas and see whether she goes with it is great.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just to clarify for the podcast then. Who does what then for the comic? Is it only All Over the House, or is it also Knob T Mouse that you guys collaborate on?
Yeah, we collaborate on both of those.
Right.
All Over the House is the main one. I do have a tendency to go off on my own and do stories for Knob Mouse.
Yeah, when you see these sort of epic storylines, then that's normally Zoe's work. She'll have a bee in a bonnet and go, I want to do this.
Right.
I'll leave her be, and a couple of weeks later, she's got it out of her system. And then we go back to Gagaday, which is usually me being involved again.
Right. So for All Over the House, then, how does it sort of work? Who instigates the idea, and how do you then execute it once you've thought of something?
I think you're the main driving force behind the jokes on All Over the House, aren't you?
I wouldn't say main driving force, but certainly it's a format which I've found very, very good to do. I enjoy doing them, and it's... You know, obviously writing serious science fiction most of the time, it's nice to be able to do these short, sweet little gags and get them out of your system, because, you know, it doesn't work in a horror sci-fi book having, you know, somebody knock on a door and say, who's there? It's Doctor. Doctor Who. Oh, you just said it. It doesn't work. We just sort of throw ideas at each other, I think. We're always silly. I mean, if you came round here and saw us during the day, you'd think, what a couple of weirdos. And I think a lot of the ideas sort of fall out of us being silly all day around the house.
There is that. And whenever we're walking out somewhere, we'll generally talk about topics, and then something will come into my head or something will come into her head and we'll say it, and the other one I'll take it and run with it. It's like improvised comedy.
Yeah.
And after a while, one of us will say, we've got to write that down, and I'll pull out my notebook. I'll write it down in a short stick figure comic form. And then we take it from there.
I think comedy is something that does work very well if there's more than one of you, because you can bounce the idea off people, and you get a feel quite instantly whether it's going to work or whether it's funny or not.
Right.
Whereas if you're on your own, I know I certainly find if I write on my own, I think, oh, this is the funniest thing I've ever written, and then you're looking at it and you think, well, I'm not sure, actually. I need to go and find somebody to validate this.
So what happens if you disagree on an idea, then? Do you each have the power of veto, or does one have to sort of talk the other one round?
We've certainly refined ideas where one of us has come, hey, I've got this great idea that goes like this, and the other said, yeah, I like that, but what about if we tried this, or, you know, if we changed that? And I think we've generally been very receptive to that, and that's why the writing partnership really does work well, because I don't think we've ever had a falling out. We go, no, he must say wibble in this film, and been really militant about it. I don't think we've ever had one of those moments.
No, I don't think we have. We've had ones where you've come into my office and had this fantastic joke that you think is great, and it's completely fallen flat with me.
But on the other hand, you've had the same, and I must admit, she mentioned this Cthulhu strip a while ago, and it got hundreds of hits. I don't know where they all came from. Well, I do, actually, because Zoe told me. But I have to admit, I still now look at that comic and think, well, it does absolutely nothing to me.
And that's the thing. I think what happens a lot of the time, she'll come in with this idea, and it might fall flat with me, or it might go really well. If it goes really well, we just write it down and we'll go with it. But if it goes flat, we tend to sit and talk over it until we've got a version that makes both of us chuckle.
Right.
So we'll bounce it back. Like, she'll say, did you dress in the dark today? And I'll say, yes. And then we'll go from there, that kind of thing.
I mean, there's that other one. There's one I did for Nobmouse ages and ages ago, which is about the junk mail burning stove. and again, that's one which I was really like, this is really funny. And it has been a very popular strip. I'm not sure that you were perhaps as enthusiastic about it as I was.
The original version, no, but then we talked a bit longer and you came up with the idea that, well, what if people were complaining about this character just burning all the post? To which I think we said, well, in that case, they'll be asked to put it in writing.
Yeah, put their complaints in writing.
At that point, we both laughed and then I wrote it down. So
excellent.
As long as one of us has found something funny at some point, we'll try and work it until both of us think it's right.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm always very much aware, certainly with Nobmouse, that it's very much Zoe's baby. She's been drawing these since, was it 96?
Yeah, it's been 14 years.
So they date back to before we even knew each other. So I tend to back away. You know, if there's something that she says, oh, no, I don't like that, I tend to let it go more with that, because I know it's her comic and I'm sort of there by invitation.
I hadn't realised you were doing that with them. And I know that I have a very clear idea of how Nodmouse is, regarding it. And All of the House is a bit different because it's developed with both of us.
Mm.
But I hadn't realised you were backing off from Nodmouse.
Well, I wouldn't say backing off, but I always do have it in the back of my mind that, you know, I can't argue too... Not that we've ever had a situation where we've been at each other's throats over anything, but... you know, you kind of have the final say on everything, as far as I'm concerned.
I'll remember that.
Yeah, you know, oh no!
But by the same token, I mean things like you know, when I show you the manuscripts from my books, whilst I value your input, I'm also aware there that I get the casting vote because that's my project.
Oh yes, it's got your name on the cover.
Mm.
I'm not gonna take it off.
Damn that Photoshop.
Mark, stand by.
So presumably then, if Zoe, if you're doing the art for it, does that mean that like say it's a visual idea and Jennifer, you've come up with it, does that mean that that you would sort of explicitly write out exactly what you want from the visuals for it, or would you just hand it over to Zoe and just say just do what you want with it?
Well, there's been a couple where I said, you know, I kind of think the joke would work if this was in the image or that was in the image, and Zoe's really been quite good at understanding what it is that I'm trying to do or trying to describe, because I can't, you know, my standard of drawing competes with a four-year-old. That's not my thing. So I couldn't draw it even if I wanted to. But you know, I always feel like we're on the same wavelength. We have very similar senses of humour. So she tends to pick up very quickly what it is I'm after. And you've always pretty much done it.
I would tell you if I couldn't draw something.
Mm.
If you came to me with a script that said, okay, on the left we need 1,000 aliens, on the right we need 1,000 aliens, and behind them even more, and all of them have to have individual and different ideas, I might say no.
I've never done that.
That was what I was hoping for the guest art.
Well... I'll see what I can do, but there are 1,000 tiny microbes. Where are the 1,000 tiny microbes?
Yeah, and they all have to be shooting rockets that are shooting other rockets that are shooting aliens on a motorbike firing lasers.
I would read that comic.
You know what, so would I.
Oh dear.
So there's your secret project, Luke.
Oh yes, that's going to be my big hit.
I can see it now. It's the darker and more gritty film version of Swanee Nook.
Yeah, you know, I feel like Swanee Nook hasn't had enough rockets up until this point, and having rockets that shoot rockets.
You never have too many rockets.
Oh, I don't know. The Care Bears have managed to get away without rockets.
Well, that's why it's rubbish. It needs more rockets.
How can a cartoon about bears that shoot lasers out of their stomachs be rubbish?
I love the idea, Jennifer, if you're just like sitting watching the news and being like, boring, no rockets. Clicking over.
Oh, you've met me then. I'm a little bit of a mad person, so yeah, I probably do sit there and go, you know, if you made a giant mushroom out of that guy's head, wouldn't it be so cool?
Well, I think that, you know, as a rocket lover, sci-fi writing is really, you know, a pretty good profession for that.
Oh yeah, you put a rocket on the cover and it will sell.
I can see your biography now. Needs More Rockets by Jennifer Kirk.
A memoir.
How I learned to love the rocket.
Oh, that could be taken so many bad ways.
Okay. Oh dear.
The Webcomics Company Podcast. It may not be a real company, but it's a real podcast.
So guys, have either of you done collaborations?
Well, I haven't really. I've once or twice done sort of kind of commission things where I've had to, you know, draw work that has been you know, requested by other people, but not quite the same as actually collaborating on a comic. And I have to.
Commission. That does sound quite difficult, because you obviously the guy's going to have a very clear idea of what he wants.
Yeah, well, I did a book cover for a book called Junk Food Hero, and when the publisher had kind of given me the book to read, you know, so I could get an idea for what to put on the cover, they kind of said, you know, just, you know, put whatever you want on it. So I kind of illustrated a part of the book that I thought was quite an important bit of the book, but it wasn't what they'd kind of pictured at all. It was they'd wanted something that was more sort of generic and more, I guess, more dynamic, really, so that it kind of stood out a wee bit. So I ended up having to completely redraw it. So I suppose one of the things that I kind of took from that was that if I was to do sort of collaborations again, and if I was to do commissions again, I would want to sort of have basically talk about the brief beforehand, you know, exactly what it is that they're wanting, and, you know, because in that instance, obviously, I ended up having to do the piece of work twice, just because it hadn't explicitly been stated what they were kind of looking for. So I guess that would be one thing that I would sort of take away from having done sort of that little bit of collaborative work. And other than that, the only collaborations I've done is this podcast. How about you, Luke?
I haven't really done any collaborative work other than, you know, kind of with friends. You know, in school we would write comics together, just, you know, for fun during classes and stuff. Nothing too serious. I suppose the closest maybe thing that I've come is I did a piece for like an art book called Bear Fight. And the brief was draw a bear fighting and submit it.
Right.
So that was that's my amazing piece of writing that I've illustrated there. It's profound and deep.
I suddenly want to get this book.
it's pretty cool, actually. Like, yeah, there were a bunch of really great artists who got stuff in there, and they're hilarious and tragic sometimes. So. Beautiful, beautiful spectrum of emotions from bears fighting there.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I've got this weird Rob Liefeld-inspired picture in my head now of a giant grizzly bear with really, really unnatural proportions and lots of pouches with a massive gun, and he's fighting aliens.
That's actually rockets. The kind of stuff that's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like robot bears and samurai bears. Mine was a picture of a bear punching Joseph Stalin in the face.
I have to get this book.
To be honest, whenever anybody mentions bears, all I can think of is Yogi Bear pinching people's picnic baskets.
Yogi Bear versus Stalin. That was so cool.
Cool, and probably for Yogi Bear, very unfortunate.
Sounds like it needs more rockets in there.
Mm. Oh yes, yeah,
rocket fight. That could be the sequel.
So, with regards to the collaborations, then I suppose one thing that you guys obviously sort of knew each other from beforehand. We all sort of contribute to the webcomic list forums, and one thing that we often see on the forums is an area called the dog pile, and it's basically where people who have an idea for a comic go, they kind of write up a wee pitch about it in the hope that they'll find an artist. I guess that's another sort of aspect of the collaboration, is where you actually find another person to collaborate with. Have you guys any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, the webcomic list and DeviantArt are kind of the only two places I've seen stuff like this. But I think it's pretty clear that there are more writers looking for artists than there are artists looking for writers.
Yeah, definitely.
By a lot.
So artists are kind of like the drummers of the comic world.
Yeah.
You could say that, except a lot less violent, perhaps.
I don't know.
But yeah, definitely artists seem to be harder to find. So if you are a writer looking for an artist, your pitch has to be perfect. You know, you've really, really got to work on it before you go looking at there, because you're not the commodity. You know, the artist isn't lucky to be getting you as a writer. You're lucky to be getting an artist. You know, and I think this is just, I know I might be jumping ahead a little, but as a writer, if you're pitching something, please, please, please do not be afraid to publish a piece of script or, you know, even a couple sentences describing the idea. Nobody on the internet is going to steal it. I don't mind sending you, but your idea is not that revolutionary.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, and you can almost guarantee that the person with the most copyright notices and the biggest fear of people stealing their idea is going to have the most generic idea.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately,
I must admit, it's something that crops up in publishing as well, with people going, don't steal my stuff, I'm going to send you this little bit, and it's copyright this and copyright that. And it is the first thing that puts an agent off, is when they receive something that the first page is some aggressive copyright warning, and they've, you know, it's just somebody trying to get an agent.
Yeah, the first page is copyright, blah, 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 blah. Do not reproduce X, Y, and Z, and X, Y, and Z. You turn the pages, it was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is that, you know, the idea, your little idea, has no value. All the value is in the work that you put in.
Yeah.
So, you know, as a writer, your pitch isn't what's going to make them $1 million. They're not going to just see it and suddenly be like, oh, I can do this and I can be rich. It's the work.
Yeah.
And how well you actually create the final product that's actually going to put any value to it.
Yeah,
because, I mean, there's not that many original story, core story ideas. It's how you develop it, you know, what sort of spin you put on that. So, you know, like you say, you're not bringing anything particularly revolutionary to the party. It's how you know, treat that pitch idea that's the significant thing.
Yeah,
because nobody's going to a publisher with your one-line description and saying, oh man, I've got this great idea. You're going to pay me lots of money for it.
Oh, I so wish that could possibly happen.
I probably. But yeah, you know, unless you're Stephen King.
Oh, but even then, you see, he's done a lot of the hard work already. He's built up a reputation such that the publishers know that when he says, oh yeah, I've got this great idea involving vampires, it's not going to be a Twilight ripoff. You know, it's going to be something really good that will sell. But if you're, you know, a relative newcomer who isn't so well known, you haven't got that reputation to back up your one-line pitch.
Well, that's it. For example, if Neil Gaiman came to the Webcomic List Forum, said, I need an artist for a project, I can't tell you where it is yet.
The answer would be yes.
Yes. Yeah. I'd say yes. But if Joe Bloggs from somewhere comes along and says, I've got this great idea, is anyone interested? We're going to say, can you give us a bit more information?
Yeah, and you know what, even if Neil Gaiman comes to the Webcomic List Forum and he says, guys, I've got this great idea, it's that, you know, and he tells this one line of an idea, even from Neil Gaiman, nobody's stealing that. The idea is worthless. It's the work.
Great. How are you going to make that, which sounds all right, into excellence? Well, it's because you've got the talent to write a good script.
Mm.
Yeah,
show us that you've got the talent if you're going to go and ask for an artist.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think there's also the it's worth going into it with a sort of realistic expectation about how much work is going to be required on both parts as well. Like sort of writing you know, like a three-panel comic, the writing bit of it, it could be three lines, but the actual work that might go into drawing that could be quite a lot of time, really, to sort of get that drawn up and then inked and then coloured and shaded and put into panels, put on the speech bubbles. You know, you're then taking those three lines, you know, you're not comparing like for like with the effort that's put in on both sides. And in all cases, that is...
I would say that's a little unfair. It might be three lines, but it may have taken a long time to get those three lines.
Well, that's true. That's very true, yeah. But I'm thinking more sort of in general terms. There will always be the ones where you've struggled over, you know, your script and, you know, it's taken you a long time, numerous drafts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I think generally speaking, it probably takes longer to do the art side of it than the writing side of it.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair.
Yeah, I must admit that we generate scripts faster than we actually generate the finished strips.
Yeah, we're about 2 months ahead on scripts.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. I mean, I must say, I am quite in awe of Zoe as an artist, that, you know, a script that will take maybe 10, 15 minutes, we'll come up with, we'll iron out the wrinkles and agree on it. She could be 3 hours doing the artwork for that.
Yeah.
So I'm always in awe of the artists. I always think that their job's much harder. But I don't know whether that's because I can't draw, so maybe that makes me more in awe.
It seems like a lot of, I know writers in the industry, I don't know where this, it's like an old adage, I don't know where it came from, but people say that, oh, writing is easy, drawing is hard. And I imagine that a writer said that, because, you know, maybe writing is easy for them. but I think that... you have to be realistic. You know, if you're coming and posting online and saying, you know, oh, I'm writing this script for a comic, and you post the script, and that's fine and everything. You have to understand that, you know, you're talking about a 10 panel page that maybe took you, say, even if it took you like 4 or 5 hours to get it right, 10 panels is a lot to draw.
Yeah,
color and ink. You know, that's taking the artist longer, and you just need to be, you know, realistic about that.
Yeah.
If you're writing a 10-panel comic, you've got to cut that down.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe. Six to nine, I think, is the standard.
Yeah. You could probably get away with 10 panels, but don't expect huge amounts of detail in them, because you've got limited space.
Yeah. And, I mean, the genre as well, you know, if you suddenly decide you're going to write, say, a steampunk kind of thing, you're then talking about drawing lots of intricate things with sort of technology, and you might have to get reference models and all that kind of stuff. That won't be the same as if you're drawing something where it's, you know, a couple of guys who are walking around the Arctic, you know, and you just got sort of white scenery all in the background. So it's... It's always worth, if a writer is looking for someone to collaborate with, being aware at least of what to expect if you are going to write something that requires, you know, crowd scenes and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and be aware, you know, as a writer, maybe when you're coming in, you do a lot of research into a certain topic, and you know, say it's set in the past and you want to know how that society works, and you read for hours and hours and you're like, oh, I'm putting in my work. You know, the artist also has to do a lot of visual research.
Yeah.
It's easy to picture, if someone says, oh, you know, a 1920s dress, it's easy to just think, oh, I know what a 1920s dress is, but try to draw that out of your head. Like, yeah, that ain't happening unless you're some kind of crazy genius.
Yeah, you're right. So, have we done this topic to death, guys?
I think we've had a good old stab at it, yeah.
So, shall we say goodbye?
Yeah, excellent. Cool, all right, excellent.
So,
fab, well, in that case, thanks for listening. I'm James Spence from Girls in Space at girlsinspace.co.uk.
I'm Luke Healy of swaneynook.com.
We are missing Luke Searle this week. You can find his work at lukesearle.com. I'm Zoe Kirk-Robinson, one half of All Over the House at allovethehouse.net, The Life of Nobty Mouse at nobmouse.net, Inkproof Cannon at inkproofcannon.com, and I have here with me...
I'm Jennifer Kirk Robinson, and I'm the other half of some of those things that Zoe mentioned. And I'm also the full two halves of jennifer-kirk.com, where you can find my work.
Full two halves, wow. You've been listening to the Webcomic Company podcast. We'll see you again later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Webcomics Company podcast. See you in 2 weeks' time.
Hold, what's that noise I can hear?
Oh man, we should get a soundboard that would elevate this podcast.
Well, there are actually four extra channels on the desk that we're using. It's just that nobody knows how it works, so I wouldn't know what to plug to where.
Let's leave it for now.
Yeah, maybe.
There's all these flashy lights and knobs and bells and whistles, and I've been told not to press any of them.
You can press them when you go to work, but not when you're here.
Oh dear.
If one of them asks for the launch sequence, just don't put anything in.